show was like Howard Stern meets Oprah. Now, I do a lot more Howard, and I'm actually, okay, I'll save that for another show. You know, I'm working on my OnlyFans. Anyhow, today is all about taking a deep breath, meditation in a new fall book for you to curl up with a pumpkin spice latte and read. Alex L. is a writer. She has written 4 books. She is an established poet from the DC area, small business owner, and her career focuses not only heavily on writing, but holistic healing from the inside out. Today, she's my guest. Alex and I met a couple of years ago at a podcast studio. And ever since then, I've been trying to get her on the show. And, you know, then life gets crazy and I drop the ball. And so I'm lucky enough to have talked to her agent and publicist. And I said, look, she's got a book out, After the Rain, and I really want to have her on. This book, After the Rain, is really like 8 different stories about her life, courage, spirit, change. And what struck me in the very first chapter that I really liked is really accountability. And I think that's something that's so hard for all of us to do, to actually take accountability. I know for me, I'm still doing it, and I think I talk about it a fair amount on this show, but even looking back on my time at Hot 99.5, which was such a gift because so many of you, the reason I have thousands of downloads on this podcast is because so many of you from The Cane Show now listen to me. So, but taking accountability for my part too in that time that I was there, it has been a challenge. So my interview with her is coming up, but of course I want to thank our sponsors. You know, the best way to support this podcast is to frequent our sponsors. Saucy.com is a free app or website that you can go to. They deliver alcohol in major cities all across the country in 30 minutes or less. So you can always keep the party going. And hey, you know what? Sorry, but they're going to check your ID when you show up. You get $10 off your first order. So use it. HeyFrage.com if you're in DC, New York City, Chicago, Los Angeles, and numerous other cities across the country. You can take advantage of fabulous Saucy. Also, RNG Insurance. Want to save, I mean, oh my God, $20, $30, $40 a month on your car insurance? Got to talk to my guy, David Gorman. Schman and I now pay less than $100 for full car coverage. It's amazing. And if you have a less than stellar driving record like I do, I mean, I've lost my license in the past, y'all. Don't worry. David is able to shop you around. That's how RNG Insurance gets great rates. They don't have to stick with one carrier. They have multiple. Not only that, even if you listen to us, because I get messages all the time, people listen to us from New York State, Tampa, Florida, New York City, Delaware, and beyond. Well, they cover multiple states, 30 of them. So check out rnginsurance.com. They're known for auto. David Gorman, also known as the Gormanator of car insurance, will help you out. Okay, here she is, Alex L. Oh my God, she's finally here. This motivational voice. I am so honored, and I have to apologize because over the years, I think I met you 2 years ago randomly when we were at a podcast studio.
Yep.
And then we went back and forth about, you know, getting you on the show and that something would happen and I wouldn't email. So I am sorry and I am glad that you are finally here because I'm a huge fan.
Oh my gosh. Divine timing and alignment. No worries at all. I'm excited to chat with you.
So Alex L, you know her probably from her Instagram, which has just become so huge. I mean, even Hillary Swank follows you. I mean,
I love Hillary. I love her. She's amazing.
She is amazing. But of course, when I would be, you know, if I were you writing those amazing notes, I'd be so damn nervous. Like, what do I write? If she's looking, I'd be totally nervous.
I think just keeping it authentic is how people relate. Doesn't matter if they're a celebrity or not, which is why I do what I do. Everybody can relate. Everybody's human on some level, on all levels, actually.
Yes. Oh my God. Well, your new book, because we're going to talk a lot about that, because I loved the lessons and so many of them resonated with my own life, After the Rain. And just you know, you've been so transparent. I know the book is great.
It's beautiful. It's really beautiful. I have to say, like, my publisher did an amazing job. Awesome.
Now, you've written 4 books. Is this one of your favorites? Because I got to tell you, it's a page turner. Like, every chapter, I'm like, okay, what's she going to reveal now?
It is. I have been joking with my editor and agent that it's my big girl book because it's a there's an extension of vulnerability in these pages, from my childhood to my relationship with my mother to my marriage to trying to conceive, all the things intertwined. And it's definitely, you know, I told myself I would not write this book until I was ready and feeling a sense of calm and healing. So this is absolutely my favorite. And I'm also with an amazing publisher. So it, like, that just makes everything feel really at home.
So one of the things I've read the book, and one of the things that struck me is your accountability in the book. And I love, in the first couple of chapters, you talk about how you were a bad employee.
That's my favorite chapter. Change is what opens the book. And it is my favorite chapter because it really gives people an inside look of, like, where I came from. And also, you know, that I had and I still have my moments of flaws and faults. And it just gives that sense of kind of resonance. And I love that chapter.
Well,
my favorite.
I thought it was great because, you know, we're both DC women, and you were born and raised in Maryland, right?
Yeah.
Born and raised in Maryland. I've lived in DC a long time. And I just thought the accountability, because I've been a terrible employee too. When I was doing jobs that I didn't want to do, like I worked at this nursing home once, and then I just decided I was going to go on vacation. And my supervisor called. She's like, "You're supposed to be working a shift." And I was like, "Yeah, I know. But I just really decided I was going to go to Connecticut on vacation." She's like, "You're fired." I'm like, "Okay." So, but you know what? Here's the thing. What I enjoy about you and your brand is a lot of people, we're in an era where people do not want to be accountable. You know, it's easy to blame someone else. So What was some turning points for you where you started to go, okay, well, I guess I am actually a bad employee?
So when I was working, I've been self-employed for 8 years, and I knew that I wanted to work for myself. I just didn't know if it was sustainable. I didn't know if I could do it. There was a lot of self-doubt there. And accountability has to start with us. Everything. I'm a big believer in people who have taken my workshops and read my work and are clients of mine. They know that I'm a big believer in everything has to start at home, and we are home. So a big turning point was like committing to, I don't want to give too much away, but committing to the last job I ever had and really trying to show up and be this employee that I knew that I needed to be, and having a boss who completely ripped me apart and actually forced me out the door we had a really bad blowout. Well, he did. And I gracefully bowed out and have never gone back to a job ever since. I don't want to give it away, but it really I had to be the one to say, hey, something has got to change, for when I was an employee and then after the fact. So that's why it's called Change. Something had got to change.
I thought that was great, because I think it takes people a very long time in life to have, and even like I look back at like my radio jobs and stuff, and at first when I left and was very angry about a toxic work environment, you know, it was always how awful management was to me or how awful my co-host was. But over the years, you begin to reflect and you think of things that you did that you could have done differently. And I love that, because I don't think you hear a lot of people say that, you know, they really don't. It's always about somebody else's fault, you know?
Well, it's hard to do our work, our soul work. You know, I am someone who is an advocate for self-care, who is a believer that self-care is community care, and that being our best self requires us to show up in our soul work. So we can't do that if we're not willing to take accountability for our actions.
Alex, what was the first moment? Because you talk about therapy, that therapy initially changed you and set you on this amazing path of just being so vulnerable and transparent and really truly living your gift as a writer. But did a friend of yours say, hey, you should go to therapy? Because you had a very difficult childhood. What was the tipping point?
I knew that I had a lot of stuff to heal from. And my first daughter, who is going to be 13, my goodness, in November, I knew that something had to shift and change for me to be the woman I wanted to be for myself and for her. So I walked into my therapist's office, the one who I attribute to giving me my tool of writing to heal, when I was 19, and my daughter was one at that point. And now I'm married. I have three daughters and I'm 31 and life has changed completely, but it wasn't without the permission from this amazing therapist that I had, Miss who taught me that I can write to heal. I've always been a writer, but it was always kind of sad, depressing poetry. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It wasn't necessarily to heal myself and to find my answers. And her being able to say, hey, Alex, you are here in my chair because you're ready to do your work and you're also capable of finding your answers. I'm just here to guide you to them. That was a game changer. And to know that I could heal myself by speaking my truth on the page was another awesome gift.
Yeah, therapy is such a gift. And what do you say to clients and fans of yours who are reluctant to get it? Because I think even though there's the stigma is going away, and I think people realize how valuable therapy is, and we all need it, even if you had what would be a good childhood. So what do you advise people to do? Because a lot of people are very hesitant. They don't want to go there.
I mean, it's not for everybody. And I'm not one to say, hey, go find a therapist if it's not for you. But because I am a writer, I will say, hey, open up your journal and take your pain to the page and then greet it with curiosity. How can I heal from this? How do I want to heal from this? Because oftentimes we have no idea how to even start the healing process. So greeting ourselves with this curiosity is what I teach in my courses and in my retreats. You don't have to know the answer. You can just do your best to say, here's what I know I want. How can I lean into that? So yes, therapy is great for some people, but also it's not for others. And that is fine. Maybe it's a mentor. Maybe it's your journal. Maybe it's exercise. It's a group dance class or something. Like, who knows what your therapy can look like? It doesn't necessarily have to be the traditional way of doing things.
I love that, because you really do have to try. You almost have to customize life, right? You have to customize it for yourself, even though some people can kind of give you a roadmap, but it's really what works for you. And what you discover.
And you have to trust yourself. You have to trust yourself. That's a big part of showing up in our healing work, is that self-trust aspect of things.
And so tell me this, one of the chapters too, you know, and you said that you have some really hard conversations in this book, because you talk about loved ones too and things that have happened. One of the big ones is your relationship with your mom, and you disclose a lot about that. I had read that you actually sat down with her to tell her and have her read the book. What did she say to you? Because there's some tough stuff that, you know, you grew up, like you felt like you were not loved when you were a kid. And it sounds like there was some serious abuse at times and your grandmother had to step in. So how did that conversation go? Because that must have been really tough.
It went beautifully, actually. And I think that goes hand in hand with the healing that my mom is doing. And something I wanted to do in this book, I know that as a writer, I carry other people's stories, not just my own. So when I'm writing these stories, when I was writing these stories, I wanted to make sure that I was intertwining other people's stories in a way that was graceful and tasteful and rooted in love and compassion for them. And I think that's really important. It's easy to be like, I didn't feel loved, and, you know, it can be this whole big whirlwind of victimhood. And that's not something I was really interested in leaning into. So I gave my mom a copy of the book. She knew that it was coming. I bookmarked the pages that had our stories in them, and I wrote her a beautiful letter. And I said, I'm looking forward to sitting down and having some open conversations woman to woman about these stories. And that's exactly what happened. My mom and I's relationship has come a very long way. I now can look at my mother as a woman and a human being walking through this world with her own stories and her own struggles, and not just my mother, right? So that's really where the grace and compassion comes into play. And also, she's an amazing grandmother to my three girls. And I think it's only right that healing is at the forefront of how we move through things as two women. So the conversation went really beautifully. And I'm so proud of her for being vulnerable enough to say, hey, I screwed up on a lot of different things and I didn't know what I was doing and I tried my best and I dropped the ball and I'm sorry. that counts for something. And that is how the door of healing opens up, with being vulnerable with one another.
Yeah, I thought that was terrific. And I thought what else was amazing too in the book is you talk about your mother-in-law, who you know, was so influential in your life. And really, because I think as you get older, you do have to begin to see your parents as just human beings. And, you know, they did the best they could with what they had, you know, which is, it's hard to shift that mentality. But your mother-in-law also said to you, you know, that basically to forgive your mom, right? That she was a, she's a person too, that did the best she could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And my mother-in-law, man, she passed away 4 years ago. But the time that I had with her was really stretching. And to see her with my husband and his two siblings, and just what the unconditional love looked like and felt like from an outsider looking in, and then to be thrusted into that family with so much love thrown at me, it was really hard at first because I wasn't used to that, but it was really beautiful. And I remember she said, you know, your mother is just a woman, just like I am, just like you are. And she was also a woman of faith. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that had a lot to do with her beliefs and the grace and things that she would extend to other people, even if it wasn't a perfect situation or if it was a hard and challenging situation.
I know. And that, I loved that chapter. That actually almost made me tear up, just because I feel like she just must have been such a great person, you know, all the lessons and gifts she gave to you guys.
Yeah, she was amazing. I miss her.
I bet. Talk to me about, you know, I thought too, it's interesting, and certainly what I've loved over the past couple of months, although it's been very difficult in this country, is we are having more equality and race discussions. And you talk about how wellness for so long has been a white woman thing. You know, really white people have kind of, how would you describe it? I guess maybe sort of take it, had more focus on wellness versus women of color. And you're completely blazing the trail, which I love, and bringing it to the forefront. So how has it been for you over the past couple of months and your entire career of bringing wellness to women of all colors?
I think me being a Black woman in this work is monumental. There are so many of us, actually. I'm not the only one blazing the trail, but I am absolutely honored to be able to be in my Black body and facilitate this type of healing for so many type of women, but specifically Black women. We are healers by nature. Our ancestors were survivors and healers in their own right. And I think it's important that we lean into that. And I think just because of how the world is and how white supremacy works, of course, certain things are going to be looked at as a white thing, or it's going to be whitewashed, but it doesn't necessarily have to stay that way. And I think for me and the other Black women and women of color in this work, we're able to give a different lens to what wellness and holistic care and self-care as community care can look like for everyone. I feel really grateful to have a just really diverse audience, and people from all walks of life in my courses, reading my books, following on Instagram, everything in between. And I think that that really speaks to everyone being a person at the end of the day and a human at the end of the day, and that I'm trusted as a woman and as a Black woman to facilitate certain healing and work within this community. I call folks my community, within my community.
And it's so true, right? At the end of the day, we all have, I mean, trauma, and, you know, we're all working to be better people or be vulnerable or to, you know, have accountability. Mm-hmm. I think it's just, I loved that you said that, though, that for Black women, it's, you know, been harder, which I think is important that we still have that conversation so people know that. And how is it changing, though? You know, like you said, you're one of those amazing voices in writing for women of color. Many other women are doing it, too. Do you think it's getting more acceptable and easier for women of color to share their feelings, get help, talk about issues?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And the common thread here, I think, for Black women and women in general, is like, we all are going through something, right? We're never alone in our struggle. We're not the only ones healing from trauma, taking our power back, having moments where we thought we healed from something and it comes back up to the surface, right? So that's really how people are able to link and connect. And I absolutely think it's changing. This has been, I mean, I'm pretty busy in general, but this year has been so, so busy for me with virtual speaking and virtual teaching and bookings and things. And it's people from all over the world. It's a global community coming together to show up for themselves, right? And trusting me to facilitate. I don't have people's answers. I say that all the time. I'm not an expert. I just know what helped and healed me. And I'm willing to share that with you. And I'm willing to help nudge and guide you to your inner voice on the page. And to have a collective of people choose to show up and do their work, their soul work, is just, it is really amazing.
I know. You say even the men show up, which I think is awesome. Men,
yes.
Men need it too. They, you know.
They do.
And I think men are getting more in touch with their emotions and letting it out and realizing, you know, they've got to work through their stuff too. So I love that you say men show up. Do you think that's the gift that COVID has given us? I know you say in the book, and I've seen in interviews, you've been busier than ever. But do you think COVID has really forced a lot of us to look inward?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. In the best, most challenging ways possible. I think that's what I've heard a lot amongst my community and my students is like, I have to be with myself now. I've had to be with myself in new ways. I miss my family. And I also know that I was busying myself with work and going out and things like that and not sitting with myself. So that is something that I hear often. And I had a friend actually tell me that this experience of quarantine has been a blessing in disguise for her. And I think that that's really powerful to be able to turn something that is so intense and sad and devastating and global into a reflective moment of hope and peace. And we're all going through this like collective grief process,
yeah.
But in the same breath, there's so many of us going through a collective healing as well. And I think that's magical.
In the book, you kind of offer a lot of anecdotes, asking questions, you know, for people to think about like what family unit means for you. But I'm curious, in your own experience, when you get into a rut, right? Because we all have self-doubt. So what do you do? Because of course you present like everything is great now that you've worked through all of your problems, that, you know, you're so confident and you are all those things. But I'm imagining, like all of us, you have moments where you're like, I don't know, is this book going to work or is this the right direction? So how do you, Alex, what's your method that you do to get out of like self-doubt or old habits?
That's a really good question. And I'd actually like to say before I answer it is that I don't present to have it all figured out. And I think that's why people really connect with me is because even in my moments of self-doubt and in my moments of uncertainty, I'm honest about that. I don't have all of the answers and I am still and constantly a work in progress. And I think that that's really important for people to share because in this day and age of social media where people really pretend, right, that they have their shit together, that they know exactly what they're doing, and you know that they have the answer. It's nurturing and healing to see that, okay, yes, she has done X, Y, and Z, and also she's still a work in progress, and that is really important. So I just wanted to put that out there that there is no pretending or presenting like this is who I am, and I also have my shit with me, right, just right. For people listening. So. For me, I mean, I'm a writer. I can't help it. I turn to the page and I really have trained myself to ask myself why. And if I'm not in the mood to write, I record a voice note and I literally talk myself through things. Sometimes my husband is like, are you talking to yourself? I'm like, yeah, I'm just like working through some stuff. Or I picked up painting in the pandemic when it's been hard to kind of write for pleasure. Painting my gratitude circles. I'm no Picasso. I'm no Basquiat, but I love my watercolors and I love making a mess. And that's what I've been doing to like get some emotional clarity and make space for understanding myself better and deeper. And it's not easy ever. Like I think people have this facade about self-care being this really glamorous, lush, luxurious thing. And it's absolutely not. It's hard. It's hard as hell. And not just that latte or that manicure or that massage, but like, how are you breathing? Are your shoulders to your ears? How can you drop them? How can you come back home to your body? And that is really where we find self-care practice.
It's so true.
So that's what I do.
If only it looked as good as a yoga retreat.
But, right. And even at the yoga retreat, it's not all, you know, beautiful, you know? Right. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I do have to say too, I mean, shout out to your husband, Ryan, who like, I mean, he does this work with you and is, you know, you talk so wonderfully about him in the book. And I know there's lots of other things, you know, that people need to read. You have to get the book because we don't want to reveal it all. There's some very emotional and deep things. But you know, isn't that one of the things with a partner? It's like you found this partner who's willing to grow with you and do this work. And that was like almost instant when you met him. What shifted in you to attract somebody like Ryan?
I shifted in me. Yeah. I had to literally change because I knew what I wanted. I knew I wanted a life partner. I knew I wanted a friendship. I knew I wanted a relationship rooted in friendship. And I knew that I had to get myself together to attract what I wanted to attract in a mate, in a friend, in someone I wanted to raise my children with, in someone I wanted to have children with, you know? So it has not always been easy. I mean, we're human and we're flawed and we've made mistakes and we've dropped the ball and we've hurt each other's feelings and all that, but we are deeply rooted and committed to loving and respecting one another the best way that we know how. And when we hurt each other, when we have hurt each other, to apologize and to come vulnerably to each other and speak, you know, truthfully and honestly. And I wrote in the essay Validation. It was my last situationship before meeting Ryan. And that was really my period of understanding that I had to stop forcing things that did not belong in my life. And I also had to make space for growth. Like a year of just like alone. And I know people hate when I say that, oh, I have to be alone to attract what I want. No, you don't. But I did because I was a hot mess. And I knew that I wanted, I knew that I needed a different type of connection with self before I could be ready to love someone else. And to understand that partners are not supposed to complete us. They are supposed to complement us. And I was looking for someone who was going to complement my life, not complete me. I had to complete me. Only I could do that.
Well, I thought that was great. And Ryan reminded me a lot of my husband, Dan, because I always tell people one of the things I love about him is he just always shows up. You know, he always rises to the occasion. And I think that's so important in a partner. And, you know, we've been through our highs and lows.
Oh my gosh, where did you guys find that? That picture is so old. We were like 22, 23. Wow.
Well, you two are.
I would have sent y'all new pictures. He doesn't have hair anymore. He cut his hair. We are adults now. We are not kids. I mean, we weren't kids. We were just so much younger.
I like it, though. It's hot and sexy and
That's
all the
so
things.
So funny. You want to hear a really funny story about that first black and white picture?
Yes.
So, oh my gosh, this was like in 2014, that photo. And everyone thought we were a lesbian couple because he had his hair up in a bun. And we were all over these like lesbian tumblers, which is fine. Like, I love my LGBTQIA plus people, but it was hilarious. He was like, I don't look like a woman. I was like, well, you can't really tell. So we still laugh about this to this day. So this is so funny. Wait till I tell him you brought this up.
Ryan's awesome. I mean, I think Ryan is just a great man that keeps working with you. And like you said, you know, it's not about finding a partner that completes you. It's like you two growing together. And it's just, I loved reading about your relationship. I thought that was so transparent.
He's amazing.
Tell me this, when people come to your retreats, what are some themes that you see for women over and over that we struggle with? Is it accountability? Is it childhood trauma? What are some things that like keep coming up that you see in your work?
I think for all of us, myself included, is like this feeling of being stuck and not knowing how to unstick, whatever that is. And also self-trust is a big one, like not trusting our intuition, not knowing how. And I think that's what is so amazing about writing practice is that if we're curious enough, we can find out our answers on the page.
Mm, Yes, just like you keep journaling, you keep at it, because eventually you'll get to the core of what that thing is, of why we don't listen to our gut.
And it's annoying. And like people are always, I get my students all the time, they're like, I'm so tired of this. I'm so tired. I'm like, I know, but let me know when you have your breakthrough. And 9 times out of 10, people will email me and say, oh my God, I had my breakthrough. And some of my clients are in therapy and using their writing practice work from me alongside their therapist. Some of them are just doing this in like group settings with colleagues or family members. So I think that that really helps too, because then we have these accountability partners as well to like lean us in a little deeper to the work that we're doing.
Oh yeah, it's so great. You know, just, I loved your book. I thought it was so amazing. And I don't want to give too much away, but I also loved your fertility journey. You know, I had a molar pregnancy miscarriage that turned into a pregnancy cancer, and then had to have methotrexate shots, and we're trying again. And so that just like resonated so deeply with me, because it so many women go through that. And it's like a sadness that you and your partner, it's hard to describe unless you've been through it. It's very, very deep. And you guys really struggled for years. Now, of course, you have three.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. Yeah. Three beautiful daughters. Yeah. But man, you never gave up. I mean, I think what's one of the things that's so inspiring about you is you just never give up, which is awesome, because I think sometimes with life, there's every turn, there's a reason to stop, you know?
Yeah, there is. And I think for so long, I was so used to giving up on myself that it became second nature to give up. And then I had to make different choices to choose myself. Yeah. So I've been saying a lot, like self-choosing has been like a prayer in my life.
Oh, that's good. You just pray on it to choose yourself.
Not even pray on it, because I'm not necessarily a religious person. Definitely connected to spirit, but not religious. I don't identify that way. But like, that's the best way I can put it, is that self-choosing is like this prayer, this mantra, this meditation of making an intentional choice to show up as our best self, even when it's easier to quit.
Yeah. Alex, what's your routine every day?
Oh my goodness. It really depends. Now, you know, I have a 12-year-old homeschooling on Zoom. I have a 2.5-year-old. I have a 1-year-old. Right now I hear with baby stairs, somebody's doing something. I don't know. It's wild. We don't really have a routine. I will say, but I have been getting up at 5:30 for the past week and a half, just to get my own sacred self-care time. It is absolutely necessary for me. And I was fighting that, because I'm not a morning person. I was fighting that so hard. I did not want to get up early. And then last week, I kind of had a breakthrough of my own. I was just like, this is not working. Like, I have so much work to do. My children still need 100% of me. My husband still needs 100% of me. And I still need 100% of me. So how do I like divvy that up? And I just had to start getting up earlier. And it's been really nice to ease into my day over the past week at 5:30, do my meditation, get breakfast together, do some work. And then, you know, the babies get up at 7:30 religiously every day. And my oldest is normally downstairs by 7:00. So it's just like, it's a good little moment to have to myself. So if I had to say what a routine was, it would be that as of a week ago.
Oh, that's good. No, that's a good discipline. And, you know, I feel like self-care for me is about what you eat, you know, your meditation, time for yourself, time for others, reflection, journaling. Are you still, you know, because I love that you said for a long time you really resisted like a holistic way of life, but then you kind of got into eating well, meditate, so many different aspects. So what do you still eat? What do you, because I imagine you think that that's a big part of the program too, right? Like what you feed yourself also helps.
Oh yeah, how we nourish ourselves, how we stay hydrated. I drink water all day, every day. We eat, you know, regular, I mean, I want to say regular, but we eat like grass-fed meats. We eat cage-free eggs. We actually recently just started shopping at the butcher for all of our meat. We no longer buy meat from the grocery store as of like 2 months ago. And we eat pretty keto a lot of the time. So, I mean, it's just like we do what's in flow for us. My little one, who's one, she's still really not into food. So I'm like nursing around the clock still. So with that being the case, I have to stay nourished. I have to stay hydrated. And they're screaming downstairs. I don't know if you can hear them.
They can come on up. We don't mind. Come on in the interview.
So I think, you know, eating well is so, so important. Getting a lot of sleep is so, so important. And I didn't resist a holistic lifestyle, but I did look into it. When I turned 23, I was like, I wonder what this is like. I mean, I went vegan and all of those things as kind of like my cleanse. And then it just carried along with me. So it was more so an awakening to, you know, a different way of being in the world that made me feel good in my body.
One of my last questions for you is about social media. How do you use social media? Because I think it's a curse and a gift. I think I read where you sort of love it and hate it too. And it's like, I love finding amazing people like you, but then I go on and I end up comparing myself a lot of times to other people. And I'm like, this isn't serving me. How do you manage it?
I mean, it's really not that big a deal to me. I think people make social media a huge thing because of algorithm and hierarchy and all this stuff. It's really not a big deal to me. It is a tool in the toolbox. I call my Alex L page is my page, but it's a community page. So it's like not only just mine, but a place where people can be in conversation with each other. They can meet one another, dialogue with each other, and dialogue with me. So it's a place that I like to just give people the space to like be themselves and also get really positive and affirming messages, because it's so easy to see the opposite online. So I always tell folks, especially entrepreneurs, like if your social media is your end all be all, then you need to revisit why you're on social media. Mm-hmm. Because we want timeless work. We want timeless legacy work, not temporary that can be changed by a big tech company, right? So they could easily say, I'm deleting Instagram, and then what? Then where's your brand? Then where's your voice? You know? So don't get too wrapped up in it. It's really not that big a deal.
Oh, that's great. Oh my God, I feel like that's such a great nugget of just keeping it. Your work is timeless and a legacy. Because you're right. If they delete it, it's like TikTok going away. You know? It's like, you have all these hundreds of thousands of followers for what? You know, like what is the purpose and meaning of your work? Well, the book was great. What is your favorite chapter?
Change, the first one that we mentioned Change. Earlier. I love it. It's really lighthearted. It shows my personality a bit. It's very fun. Oh, I reread it and I just was laughing like, oh my God, I remember that day. Like it was yesterday.
It's hysterical. I mean, the fact that you found out you were fired via an email that they CC'd you on.
Yes.
I'm like, that is the type of shit that would happen to me where they have a whole ongoing conference. She's got to go. And here you are. Finally, you jump in. Guys, I've been on the whole time. They're like, oh, okay, well, your stuff's packed. Like, see ya.
You still got to go. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
They didn't even apologize. Funny. They were like, yes, girl, bye. Like, they were crazy. You're like, thanks.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Okay. I got to tell you, and you'll know I want to tease this because I think this is really big. You and Ryan go very, very deep about something that happened in your relationship. What is the title of that? I'm losing it.
Healing.
That was my favorite because I could completely relate to that. People need to buy the book. It's called After the Rain. Now, you have a link on your Instagram because you like to support more local indie bookstores. Where do you want us to buy this?
So if you're in the U.S., I would love if you bought from bookshop.org because they support indie bookstores and we need them. Amazon has enough money. I love Amazon, but they have enough money. And with the books like that we're buying, we need to think about supporting our indie bookstores. If you are international, you can find where to buy international, and that might be on Amazon, and that's fine for you. But if you're in the U.S., bookshop.org, please, and thank you. And I don't know when this is going to air.
Thursday. This Thursday.
Okay, so perfect timing. Next week, the 14th, I'll be having a virtual book launch, and I'll be in conversation with a really awesome woman, and we're going to be having like a mini workshop and talking about After the Rain. So that can also be found at the link in my bio as well, or on alexl.com.
Well, Alex, I'm so thrilled that we could connect. I am so grateful for you for being on the show. The book was so good, and just your continued amazing work that helps so many of us. So thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. I appreciate your time.
Yay! Alex, thank you. That was awesome. Oh my God.